But the houses in Backus Road ain't a problem.
But the value, but one building in Backus Road is a problem. So just as Alba said years ago, and just as one officer said, we see which one is the real person. One catching that for it. So look all the hotels that we build now, and you ain't got one person in there. You understand? So when you make all of these hotels, we would build a Hyatt, you're pushing a whole building, and all it now, you got your player park out there, because it's the two greatest men. You know, you remember the days, and I can finish on this here, because this is so important to me. You remember
but
you used to call you ain't,
you, ain't, you are not, hold on a second, you are not going anywhere with your argument, you know.
I know
because
that.
I would ask you simply, if you can interview any of the people who are currently employed at the Hilton and say to them, would you give up your job working at the Hilton to go and work in a geriatric hospital, what would they say? The amount of money that any of these hotels that you are talking about generate in terms of foreign exchange. And you even got to go to the hotels, just go down by Boatyard or any of those beachfront areas. And ask what kind of money that they generate. They generate from vendors. They generate from bartenders. They generate from people who are working in various administrative capacities. Ask any of those people if they really think this hotel development is a waste of time, and they will tell you that you're talking nonsense because Barbados has been built on the back of the tourism industry.
You're wrong.
The challenge is that.
What we were built on the back of? The sugar industry built Barbados, not the tourism. Tourism only just came the other day.
How much did the sugar industry generate last year?
Generate so far this year.
I could tell you how much the rum industry generated, though.
I could tell you how much
the rum industry generated, and I could also tell you how much the industry of people who drink rum generate. Right?
All from sugar.
Huh?
Now, yeah, I got answers.
Ain't come from this sugar. It's sugar that we import.
I'll go off the radio. Who is the two most powerful men in Barbados right now? You want to answer that?
Huh? The two most powerful people in Barbados are the Governor General and the Prime Minister and their women.
David Comisonger and that boy that got Nelson supposed to take down. That is the two most powerful men in Barbados. Don't get the short building take long to get the Clement Payne park put up. So them the two most powerful men in Barbados. Thank you, man.
All right, thank you. Somebody here asking me if you don't make a living from guests in the hotel on the West Coast. But I didn't know that you're a taxi man, so you're supposed to make a living in the tourism industry. So, but I didn't even make that point. Thank you, sir, for making that point about the fact that. You're opposed to everything. This is what the gentleman is saying. You're opposed to everything that the government is doing and seems to forget that you do make a living in this business. This is Down to Brass Tacks. Good morning.
Good morning, Peter.
Yeah, good morning. Hey, morning. How you doing, Vinny?
Not too bad, you know. Peter,
why are your songs so soft?
Because that man just nearly drive me through the wall.
You can let him drive you through a wall.
Yeah, nearly drive me through the wall. Make me go through the wall, man. Jesus.
Man, we need to try and relax yourself here. Yeah? Drive you through no wall.
Anyway,
that's not to worry about.
Anyway, Peter, are you going lux?
When the move now, so they got cut my hair.
No, when I would introduce it to my hairdresser, Deirdre. She would
okay.
Say, no, but really nice for you.
All right, no problem.
Anyway, listen, Peter. Tell me something. St. George, okay.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just going to put this way. 10 years, and no toilet has never been built for that place in 10 years because we was not in power. The minister, Mr. Glenn Clark, couldn't get anything done because we was not in power. 10 years, you know what? If it wasn't for the COVID-19, everything we tried to do would have been done. Look at the roads that are doing. I just drive down to St. Peter this morning. and part of the road down there is like, it's like a smooth baby bottom ride. Nearly everywhere now the roads are fixing. Yes, the wells need doing. But with COVID taking up all the money because they got to build that place in Sint, you know what I mean? What do you call it again? For the COVID people. What do you call here again?
The St. Lucie.
Yeah, and you know, and that takes money. And we have to buy things. People give us things yet, but look at all the money we got to spend to get people to do testing and all these things. If COVID never come, they would have to find something to say, talk now about the tree don't look good. Right? But the youth must let them know if it wasn't for the COVID, the hotels would have got guests. Right now, people are coming in because they have to stay at an hotel or wherever they have the apartment, because right now my friend works in a private home and the whole family is in a hotel and to wait to make sure that they test all right. We are doing right, and we got to, if in the Prime Minister and her cabinet never come on board quick. Do you know Barbados would have been wiped out in about 2 months, because if we did let all the COVID people through? You know the amount of people dying every day in the United Kingdom. I only can talk about the United Kingdom and a little bit about Jamaica. There are over 200 and something odd people dead in Jamaica. They don't have nowhere to put them. And we have places to put them here. And the people must stop complaining, because we keep crying wolf, wolf, wolf. And one day when the wolf come, you know, you're not, no one going to listen to you. You know that story about you cry the wolf?
Huh? I know this story, yeah. I know this story.
Right. They got to, you know, our Prime Minister, she's doing a fantastic job with her minister. And we need the wells clean, because I, number one, need my well clean. But I understand now the money is not there and the money allocated to be done. But there is other things cropping up all the time. If we didn't go in and find enough money to run the country, we wouldn't have been going everywhere to try and get help. Right? If we didn't win this government, what would happen to the COVID people? Go on, Peter, be fair. Because the Prime Minister then didn't know what to do. He just sit back. We have a Prime Minister on board.
Thanks a lot, Winnie. We good chat. Good hearing from you, and all the best for the weekend. Have a good weekend. Down to Brass Tacks. You can call us on 434-1790, or you can email me at peter.w.wickham@gmail.com. The chat is 266-IVOB. You know, it's interesting. We have a situation in the United States of America now where President Trump is claiming that the election is fraudulent and that it was stolen from him. It takes me back to an unfortunate place a few months ago where certain forces in the Cooperative Republic of Guyana were suggesting that the election was stolen from them. In the case of America, United States of America, President Trump has started to talk about legally cast votes. In the case of Guyana, we had a most uncomfortable conversation about valid votes and not just votes. And it is a striking similarity and a disturbing similarity, because when this was going on, I remember Mike Pompeo had a lot to say about the extent to which Guyana had abandoned democracy and the president of Guyana was going down the wrong road. I certainly agreed with him at that point in time that this was a most unfortunate position that was happening where democracy was concerned in Guyana, where instead of talking about let's count all the votes that have been cast, we had conversations about whether or not someone should have the right unilaterally to throw away 115,000 valid votes. It's ironic that a few months later, we have a situation where President Trump wants to go to the Supreme Court to throw away not hundreds of thousands of votes, but millions of votes that have been cast in a way that was equally valid. And he's suggesting that there's a difference between a vote and a legal vote. I consider the whole thing to be abject nonsense, and it is fascinating how you can have a situation where politicians speak out of both sides of their mouth. And I'm anxious to hear what Pompeo's view on the American situation is as well, since he had a whole lot to say when Guyana was facing their challenges. Down to Brass Tacks, good morning. Good morning and welcome. 434-1790, good morning and welcome.
But I heard you mention that Jimmy Carter was the last one-term president.
I'm sorry?
In your preamble, you said that Jimmy Carter was the last one-term president. I'm wondering if it was George Bush Senior. Well, Bill Clinton had beat when he went off the
team. Ah, yes, that's right. Yeah, yeah. Okay. So he would have been last because he was after Jimmy Carter. So my apologies. So you had a Democratic and you had a Republican. You had one of the DLP, Democratic side. So this would be the second Republican in recent times. Yeah.
Right, because George Bush would have been the vice reaction.
Yeah, point taken. And corrected.
Okay, cool, man.
Yeah. All right. Thanks for that clarification. So to the list of one-term presidents, we also need to add George Bush Sr., who started a process and never finished. I have a WhatsApp, an email message here from Carl Moore. It is entitled Living and Dying by the Gun. And Carl says, death by the gun visits so often these days. We are becoming accustomed to it, and it is so sad. And I couldn't agree with you more, Carl, on that. And while we're on the subject of Carl Moore, Carl has indicated that he is shortly announcing, he's shortly launching a new book, a new publication. The last one, I believe the title was The More the Merrier, which is a good book. This one is called Talking to the Trade Winds, 109 Essays by Carl Moore. And I'm happy that he has done me the courtesy of giving me an advanced copy, and I will read it. And hopefully in due course, I'll be able to offer some comment on the essays included. Carl, of course, is one of our literary giants who contributes, who is often critical, which is something that I think is well-intended. And certainly we have too little or too few Carl Moores in journalism today that can wrap you on the knuckles and give you a good talking to regarding the direction that you're going. So I'm happy that he is still in the vineyard and still writing. And this book, Talking to the Trade Winds with Voice, will be available shortly, as I understand it. It will be launched and distributed, and we'll all get a chance to read it and to digest the contents therein. Down to Brass Stocks, good morning.
How are you doing?
Good morning. I'm good.
Hey. You can hear me?
I'm now hearing you, yes.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm calling because your opening remarks attracted my attention when you spoke about Dr. Gonzalez. I believe he was on campus with you when you were a student.
He was what?
You know, remember Gonzalez?
He was what?
Dr. Gonzalez was a tutor at KFL. In the 90s.
He never taught me. He never taught me. I am so old as Wendell, right?
Yeah.
Right, Wendell, I am so old, I let you. You forget that. You like Methuselah. I ain't so old.
I run with all you old men.
I'm a young boy. I ain't even see a star pitch yet.
Anyway.
No, he taught you on campus.
No, he didn't teach me. I was we had the other guy from Jamaica. Nice guy,
Neville Duncan,
yeah.
Neville, right, yeah.
Neville, very good fellow.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I want to congratulate Dr. Gonzalez too, because I think he's traveled a long way. As you know, he was thought of as being a communist. And I think he thought himself a communist. In those days, many people on campus were communists. And, you know, he was also not given a work permit to come back to teach at KFL. This is when Tom Adams was in government. Now, there are many views about that as to whether it was because of his communist friends or maybe some other personal matters, but I'm not going into that right now.
I was hoping that you would.
Okay, let me get a little bit though. Because, you know, Gonzalez is still a very attractive man. Mm. And either he gravitates to women or women gravitate to him. And I think when he came to Barbados, it was not different. And the word was that...
I don't know if you can say that on the radio, though.
No, I'm speaking plain language. I'm not being...
I've heard those rumors.
Right,
so, I've heard rumors to that extent, yeah.
So Gonzalez, in his book, he wasn't sure what it really was, if it was the communism or it was the other personal matters. Anyway,
right.
You know that Gonzalez kept going. He went back to St. Vincent, and he got involved in politics as a young man.
Mm-hmm.
And he was involved with the Communist Party. You remember that? Yeah, he was with the Communist Party. And then mm-hmm. he gave that up, and he joined a more centrist party. Mm-hmm. And it's good to see that after all of those years, he has been able to make a contribution to St. Vincent. And now he's able to break a record of being there, winning 5 times. And I think it's significant. Because he grew up, I mean, when he was a young man in his 20s, he was around here. So we could count him as one of us. And we're glad to see him go so far. But you made the point about being in government, being a prime minister for all those terms. And I wanted to address that as well. In the American situation, it is 2 terms, but perhaps there's so many millions of people, they have a wider pool to draw on. So maybe that's the reason why they say 2 terms for you, no more, let other people come to serve. Whereas in the Caribbean now, you have a smaller pool of people to draw on. But that said, I agree with you in some way that for prime ministers to go on for a very long time can be very damaging to their health. And also to their relations with people. Because you've had the case of Arabar, when he got into this 3rd term, he was good the first 2 terms. In the 3rd term, he got involved in all kinds of things that seemed to speak to somebody who was tired and their nerves were sheared or something. And that very last term, before he lost, right, he wasn't doing too well. And he looked tired, and then he went on his sabbatical, as you know. And then even when he came back in 1986, he still was tired. But I think it's how you also run government. In these small countries, people, prime ministers normally tend to think that they have to be involved in every little thing. But they have enough people around them that they can delegate more so that they don't have to extend themselves so much. And I want to talk about Wayne Alfatu, because his first 2 terms were good. And he had once said that he felt that 2 terms would be ideal. But then he went on for another term. But in mm-hmm. that last term, Wayne Arthur was really running ragged. And because I think sometimes he was too much involved with everything. I don't know if Mr. Dr. Gonzalez is perhaps doing it differently. He's probably delegating more. He likes to laugh a lot. He likes to have fun. And he's having fun. And it is not as stressful for him as it would be for other people. That said, I agree with you that there could be consideration given to term limits, and perhaps not 2 terms, or not 2 terms up here. I would say 3 terms, right? But then again, it depends on how the person is running things. But 3 terms might be better than the 2 terms as for America. So I agree with the idea that you're pushing, but sometimes 2 people need to, I don't know if the friends can speak to them, that they can't be running ragged and trying to do every little thing. You have a lot of people to work with, so just steer it, let the people do the work, and you can laugh and have fun. I suspect this is what Gonzalez has been doing, because he still looks pretty good. And when mm-hmm. I saw the campaigns online, his campaign looked like
Wendell.
Yeah,
Wendell, yeah. You. I mean, no, I'm interested in the conversation you're having, but to say that Prime Minister Gonzalez looks good, I think is a bit of a stretch.
Like,
is it a little big?
Yeah. Peter, you want me? To
I mean, I am not about to take pot shots at the man on a physical nature basis, huh? But I do feel that fitness is not his strong suit. You know, yeah, and the other point I would want to make is that I do have the good pleasure of working for him, knowing him on a personal level. And he doesn't delegate any more than anyone else. He still does a lot of things himself in terms of a lot of his speech writing, for example, he does himself. Mm-hmm. I'm fascinated, quite frankly, at his energy levels because he works until late into the night. If he holds you in a conversation and it's a conversation that he's interested in, he can speak to you for several hours in some instances.
Yeah,
he makes long speeches.
Yeah,
and he writes all of his speeches himself.
I think probably at this stage, time for fun.
Right. At this stage, he still goes on the campaign trail. He goes to people's houses. People will call him directly and say, PM, I need assistance regarding A, B, and C. and he would get up and he will go and he will assist them. I mean, he still deals with a lot of things on a personal level, so he doesn't seem to delegate. The other point is that when he became prime minister, I remember well when he said that I do not want this job for longer than 10 years. When he was elected the first time, when he was re-elected the first time, he said, this is my final term. When he was re-elected the second time, he said, okay, this is definitely my final term. When he was re-elected the third time, so I mean, you know, here it goes. No,
I heard Owen ask with
Wendell, this is my challenge, yeah, that right. I have respect for the right of a people to make a decision on their own in terms of where they want to go with this thing. And I think that in a situation where the people are willing to re-elect him, who am I to say it differently? But I do feel that at a certain level, you're saying three terms, I say two. To me, we can meet in the middle. And I think if it was three, the fact that we have just established a principle that says that there's a point at which a prime minister should stop, I think it is a good thing. Yeah. Because the flip side of it, right, the flip side of it has been a negative one. You look at St. Kitts and Nevis and the situation with Dr. Denzel Douglas, right? A big part of the reason that Dr. Denzel Douglas's party has floundered and suffered so badly is because of the fact that he refused to plan succession within that organization. If he had succeeded after 10 years, as was the initial plan, to the person who is currently prime minister, Labour would have been unstoppable because they would have now had 10 years under Dougie, 10 years under Harris, and they will now be in a situation where they're looking at the next 10 years under the next bright leader. The problem, however, was that they endured under Dougie, and they stuck with him after the 4 years, and he was going for a fifth. So the flip side of it is that I think it destroys political organizations also when you have talent that can't come to the fore. You recall the confusion with Prime Minister Arthur and Prime Minister Motley, current Prime Minister Motley, where it was clear that she seemed to be ready to move on, and he did not think it was time, and it created all kinds of problems. So but my
that,
thing is
that was a very dynamic situation going on there, but he had intended what he said for two terms, and then by the third term, for some reason, if they had called him back, and it was telling on him. Perhaps he could have allowed somebody to do it, and they let him decide who else they want.
Well, that's my thing. You know why I like to use the St. Kitts and the Barbados example? Because I'm hearing in both instances, I'm hearing prime ministers tell me that the persons who are currently prime ministers cannot be prime ministers. And you know what? They get elected, and they seem to work fine. In the case of Timothy Harris, Denzel Douglas gave every possible reason why he could not be prime minister. The person crossed the floor, he defeated him, and he's prime minister, and he got reelected a first time. And he too is saying that this is his last term. Now I'm saying that in a situation where Dr. Douglas has to explain to me, you know, why couldn't Timothy Harris be prime minister? Because clearly he's not doing a bad job. And it's the same argument with Owen Arthur. Owen Arthur felt that Prime Minister Motley couldn't be prime minister. She's prime minister today, but she won all the seats.
There's a kind of precedent for it. Not same thing. But you know that the chairman of the Barbados Labour Party has 3 years at a time. After you finish your 3 years, you have to give it up for at least a year. So you're not being chairman for all 10, 15 years. 3 years, somebody else comes and they're allowed to run it if they do a good job. Perhaps they may be allowed to run what is really essentially the administrative arm of the party, which is different from the political arm. So I'm saying it could also apply to the political arm where the person has no more than 3 terms.
Mm-hmm.
That would be good for the person and good for the country, I believe, if they can nurture other people who can then rise to the leadership of the country.
Okay. All right. Sounds interesting. All right, Wendell, thanks a lot. It was good chatting with you. I know you've done some work on Caribbean prime ministers and some writing. So these issues are right very much in your ballpark. So happy to discuss. Down to Brass Tacks, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, ma'am. Good morning. How are you doing?
I want to raise an issue that has been making news that is of interest to me. Now, the heads of government agreed to participate in a travel bubble recommended by CAFRA, that's the Caribbean Public Health Agency. It was agreed that the travelers from countries within that bubble would be allowed to enter into each other's country without being subjected to the PCR testing before arrival, and would also forego quarantine restrictions, but still could be subjected to screening on arrival. Now, the participating countries had to pass an eligibility criteria, or criterion, if you want to put it that way, and it was recommended by the Caribbean Public Health Agency, the criteria, the standards that had to be met in order for countries to participate. But now what we're having is a situation where most of the countries that were part of that bubble have withdrawn. Now, I think a detailed explanation is certainly needed on what has changed significantly that would have caused the exodus of many of the Caribbean member states who were eligible to participate in this travel bubble to now withdraw. And also, I want to know, and if the relevant authorities are listening, if the CARICOM ambassador is listening, what are the implications of this situation on interregional travel? You're hearing so much about this. Initially, the idea was highly recommended to CARICOM heads. They agreed to it. But now we're seeing almost dismantling of that initiative. Thank you for listening.
Okay. Thank you very much for calling. 4341790, good morning and welcome to the program.
Morning, Mr. Wickham.
Yes, sir. Morning.
I want to debate with you a situation which you had a little earlier in relation to the ministerial building and the district hospital.
Is this Uncle Mark by any chance?
It is. And I want to be able to express myself first, right? Now, I know there have got to be changes in the country. They've got to be moving forward. Bob is still part of UNICEF. In relation to the world heritage places? I asked the question.
If Barbados is still part of UNICEF, and you would imagine so. Uh-huh.
What about the building, as far as I'm concerned, the government headquarters, which was selected as well, and also the district hospital, which was selected. Now, if you are going to dismantle these, then obviously you're planned in the initial stage as far as Barbados is concerned. It has been a waste of time. Now I'm saying that to say this, right? You cannot talk about dismantling the Michael District Hospital and renovating the what I consider to be the government headquarters of Bay Street. Because in between there are a solid district, Second Avenue, Beckers Road, First and Second Avenue, Beckers Road. The area of land, if I'm not mistaken, stretched from Beckers Road all the way out to Chelsea Road. Why I'm saying this is that somewhere along the line, I am of the opinion that the people who are making plans for this country before understanding fully the consequences that would involve in the exercise in relation to the people that live within the area. Now, if you talk about dismantling the St. Michael District Hospital, again, you're talking about dismantling history that has been placed there for a considerable amount of time. And there is a new body of people now coming out of Ministry of Culture, where they're looking at buildings that have been built for a period of time and that they're securing these buildings based on the fact of what those buildings meant to Barbados many years ago. I think I read that a couple of months ago, that there's this body of people now who are on the verge of looking for schoolhouses or houses within certain areas that certain prominent people live there, and this will become part of the cultural history of Barbados to let people know this person lived there, this person lived the next place. I think that we can bypass at this time the destruction of St. Michael's District Hospital, and we can avoid the troubling of the ministry building.